Hi everyone, let me have my welcome to Luke's. It's great to be here with you and great to be asked to speak on this question of why bother with Jesus Christ. My wife Jo was having a busy day at work the other week and just went to Cafe Nero on Marylebone Street, just around the corner from where she worked, wanted a caffeine fix. And she was in this queue and there was a mother and the mother's son in front of her, and they were taking their time, what coffee to have and whether they should get something to eat and where should they sit. And Jo was getting a little impatient and wanting them to hurry up. Eventually you get to the front, they choose what they wanted to have, they buy it, they turn round, and do you know who they were? It was Victoria Beckham and her son Romeo, right? Wife of David Beckham, ex-Spice Girl, now like a fashion designer. And when Jo told me this, I was like, oh my goodness, did you say hi? Did you get her autograph, a selfie? Did you arrange a play date with the kids? And, well, unfortunately, alas, no. You know, Jo missed the opportunity. By the time she realized who this woman and this son were, the moment was gone. She'd missed it. Now, why do I start with that story? I start with that story just because it's my hope today that none of us would make a similar sort of mistake when it comes to Jesus Christ and fail to realize who he really is. Fail to realize who Victoria Beckham is. Well, in the big picture of things, it doesn't really matter. I mean, all respect to the Beckhams. But according to this passage that was just read out from us from the Apostle Paul, part of the Bible, actually, to fail to realize who Jesus Christ is, well, actually, there is nothing more important. So what I want us to do is just have a look at this passage, a passage which many scholars consider to be one of the most important passages in the New Testament when it comes to the significance of Jesus Christ. And why should anyone bother with him today? And there are basically two reasons in the passage that we should bother with him, that he matters. And the first is this: because of who Jesus is. So just glance down, if you can, to line 15 there, where we read, the Son, that is a reference to Jesus Christ, is the image of the invisible God. Now, wherever we're coming from this lunchtime, whatever our thoughts are on God, religion, I'm sure we would all agree with the last part of that sentence, the invisible God, that if he is there, well, he's invisible. I can't see him. Can you see him? None of us can. Which does provide us a bit of a quandary. Because is there a God? Is there not a God? Don't know. Can't see him. He's invisible. I say he. How do we know he's a he and not a she or an it? How do we know what God's like at all if he's invisible, if we can't see him? And so why are there so many religions, so many worldviews, so many different understandings of life? And we see that all around us. Well, precisely this, because whatever is behind this universe, whether we call it a God or some power or some ultimate meaning, it's sort of out of our ability to see, to comprehend. Invisible. The only way we could know for sure that God is there, what God is like, is if God made himself visible to us, if he revealed himself to us so we could see him. And that is exactly the claim of Christianity. What is unique to Christianity is that in the person of Jesus Christ, God has made himself visible. God has revealed himself to us that 2,000 years ago, he entered space-time history. He was born into earth. He walked this planet. And so to look at Jesus Christ, to see him, his life, now in the pages of Scripture for us today, that is to see God himself. That's what that phrase means, that Jesus is the image of the invisible God. Last year, I was in New York with work just for a few weeks. So I was away from my wife, Jo, away from the three kids. And obviously, being in New York, couldn't be with them, couldn't see them, didn't know how they were getting on. But the wonder of modern technology nowadays, with like your phones and with FaceTime and Skype and Google Video, you can see how they're getting on. They had them up on the screen, just an image on the screen. But you could see them. I could hear them. I could check them. Millions of, thousands of miles away. Sorry, not millions, thousands of miles away. Felt like they were, in the room with me. Just an image, but it was them. You could see just how they were doing. It's a picture of what's going on here. This claim that Jesus makes that he's the image of the invisible God. That to see Jesus is to see God himself. To listen to Jesus, his words in the pages of the Bible, that is to hear the voice of God himself. The way Jesus lived his life, a beautiful life, perfect character, flawless. Again, is to see right into the heart of God and who he is. The Son, the image of the invisible God. And it's why this passage goes on to talk about Jesus in just such lofty terms. I don't know if you noticed it as it was read out. In verse 16, all things have been created through Jesus and for Jesus. Verse 17, in Jesus all things hold together. Verse 18, in everything Jesus might have the supremacy. And so this question, you know, why bother with Jesus Christ? Well, wow, if he's the image of the invisible God, he is none other than the divine creator, the divine sustainer of the whole universe, the very integration point of all reality, because all things are created for him, that he made you, that he sustains you. Every beat of our heart, every breath we take is a gift from him, that the meaning of our lives, the very meaning of it, are found in relationship with him. Because all things, including us, are created through him and for him. So that's the first response from this passage on why bother with Jesus Christ. Because of who he is. The image of the invisible God. Now the second thing for us to see from this passage, why to bother with Jesus, is because of what he's done and done for us very personally. And this is verse 19, if I can read that to you. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus Christ. That's what we've just seen. Fully God, fully man. Now listen to verse 20. And through Jesus, to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Now, you only have to look at the world around us to realize that we do not have peace today. We do not have peace with other countries, the conflict in Syria. We don't have peace with one another. We have arguments, we fight, there's sibling rivalry from birth. And we don't really have peace with ourselves. We get quite stressed, we get anxious, we're worried, we're fearful. Is it just me? We struggle to have peace. We don't have peace. Relationships fall apart, things decay, we decay. The other day my son said to me, Daddy, what are those lines on your forehead? And I was like, uh-oh, they've drawn on me whilst I'm asleep. But I have a look in the mirror. Oh, they're wrinkles, son. I don't like them. Get rid of them. I was like, can't help you there. We decay. Things fall apart. Second law of thermodynamics. We live, we die. What's the point? It's, everything's just falling apart, breaking apart. We don't have peace. We don't have harmony. The atheist and philosopher Bertrand Russell observed that everything in life is destined to extinction. And because of that, he said, the only firm foundation upon which to build your life is the foundation of unyielding despair. Now, I'm not sure if you would put it like that, whether you would agree with that. It's pretty depressing, isn't it? Right? If there's no God, if there's no meaning, what's the point? Where are we going? We all fall apart, we all decay. But what I want us to see is that in this passage, Jesus offers a far more compelling vision for life. A foundation not but, you know, on despair, but on hope. Not on extinction, but on reconciliation of all things, genuine peace. How does he do it? Well, the verse says, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Now, what's going on here? Well, look, Jesus knows that the fundamental reason why we don't have peace in this world is because at the heart of it all, none of us have peace with God. That is our fundamental problem. You know, we're made for God. We saw that before, created for him. And therefore, all problems in life are going to stem from the fact when we turn from God and we don't live for him and we live for ourselves. That's the fundamental problem. Not having peace with God. That's why things fall apart. That's why we die. Verse 21 speaks of being alienated from God.
It speaks of being enemies in our minds. It speaks of our evil behavior. That sounds strong. Evil behavior is just living for ourselves, going our way, not going God's way. Not having peace with God, and that's why we don't have peace in this world, and everything's going to extinction, so it seems. But here's the wonderful thing about Jesus Christ, that he comes to earth precisely to bring peace between humanity and God. Not to make war with us whilst we're his enemies, but to make peace with us. And he does it through his blood shed on the cross. Now this gets us right to the heart of the Christian message, that Jesus Christ, God himself, the image of the invisible God, leaves the throne room of heaven, gets born into this world. Why? To shed his blood for humanity. To die for you, for me. Do you know that? To bring peace between us and God. You know, sin alienates us from God, but when Jesus Christ dies on the cross, he is the one, the Son of God, he is the one alienated from his Father so that we could be accepted. You know, sin living for ourselves, that makes us enemies with God, but it is Jesus on the cross as he dies. He becomes, if you like, an enemy of God. He is the one forsaken so we could be forgiven and so we could have peace with God now and for all eternity. Peace through his blood shed on the cross. That's the heart of the Christian faith. That's what he's done for you personally. When I was growing up at home, my mum and dad went away for a few days, probably wanted a break from me and my sister. And we'd got to that age, apparently the age of responsibility, where we could look after ourselves, look after the house, had to keep it tidy. That was very important in our household. Weren't allowed to play with water indoors because that made a lot of a mess, a lot of a problem. My parents go away. What do we find in the bathroom? We find the old water pistols. We get them out. We start playing with them. No, we don't fill them up. We're not that stupid. What we hadn't realized, though, that in these water pistols was some old stagnant water that had been left in there from the previous summer. And you know what it's like when you leave water for a long time? It just goes all sort of black and icky. It was just disgusting. And anyway, you can imagine what happens next. Me and my sister were on the landing, you know, sort of waiting to go. It's one of these highly pressurized water pistols. We like pumped it all up. Not really. And, you know, my Swiss won a little standoff, me and my sister. Fortunately, it wasn't me. My sister was the one who fired first. But oh my goodness, I can still remember the look on her face when all this disgusting, icky, gooey black water just splattered out of the gun right onto our newly decorated sort of landing walls, like three walls in the ceiling. And she was just like, oh my goodness. It was just, and I was, you know, laughing a little bit, but I realized I was going to get in trouble as well because I was the older brother, rest of it. Anyway, so my parents come home. They see the walls. And I can tell you, there was alienation between us and my parents. There was no peace between us. They were angry, rightly so. What have you done to our walls? And my sister and I were like, oh my goodness, what on earth are we going to do? We can't pay. We're just like, I'm so sorry, Mum and Dad. Please forgive us. Please. We long for reconciliation with them. But my parents, they were there. They were looking at us with their children. Yeah, they want to forgive us. Of course, they want to reconcile. But who is going to pay for the walls? Who's going to deal with it? And I tell you, I can still remember, this is 25 years ago, you don't forget things like this. I can remember my mum and dad in the end, you know, having to work it all through and just in the end saying to us, all right, Mark, Michaela, you know, it's all right. We'll pay for it. We'll deal with it. And to feel their embrace, to know their love, to be reconciled with them, to have peace with them again, it is something you never forget. And that is just a tiny picture of what Jesus Christ has done for each and every one of us. The mess of our sin splattered over God's world. The need for reconciliation with God, peace with God, for there to be a future we long for. But God, you know, he can't just forgive us. Who's going to pay for the sin? Our sin, the mess we've made. Who's going to deal with it? We can't. And incredibly, God says, you know what? I will pay for it. Not at the cost of, you know, a few reams of wallpaper, you know, new wallpaper. Ultimately, at the cost of himself, he would come to earth and die for us. Despite the way we treat him, so we could know his love, feel his embrace, that if we say sorry to him, that if we confess our sins to him, if we ask for forgiveness, he says, you know, right, it's okay. I'll deal with it. I'll pay for it. That in Christianity, here is a God who would rather die for us, rather die for you, than lose you. Why bother with Jesus Christ? Because of what he's done for you. Because of the way he has reached down for you and for me to bring peace. And you know what? You won't find this in any other religion, any other worldview. It's all about reaching up, a list of do's and don'ts. And are you good enough? And can you prove yourself? And if you've lived like that, you'll know it's exhausting. It's not just exhausting, it's impossible. I don't live up to my own ideals, let alone God's ideals. We need help. We need a savior. That is who Jesus is. Reaches down, comes down, dies for us. The image of the invisible God, the only one who can bring peace between us and God. Give us the life we were made for, the future we long for, the reconciliation of all things. Let me stop there. So for some, this could be brand new. You might have lots of questions. I'm going to stay around. I'd love to chat to you some more. Talks like this are put on every Thursday, where you can hear about Jesus Christ, more about who he is, what he's done. Luke, in a moment, will tell you about a course that's run, again, where you can investigate the claims of Christ, ask your questions. It's a brilliant course. I'd recommend it to you. For now, let me hand back to Luke, and thanks for listening.